From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1975 when just about two-thirds of college faculty were full-time professors. That meant that a majority of the instructors were compensated in a way that allowed them some financial stability. They could stay at the university, work on honing and improving their course offerings. Students could expect that most of their professors would be back the following semester or year. By 2011, though, according to the American Association of University Professors, the number of full-time professors had fallen to about 30%. 70% are so-called contingent professors, either adjunct, as many of them are, or non-tenure-track full-time employees. And that's led to a growing number of campuses that are seeing unionization efforts on behalf of faculty. It's happening right now at the University of Rochester, where the staff is exploring options. The argument in favor of the status quo has a number of prongs, not the least of which is this. Some adjuncts are professionals in a given community who want to offer their expertise by teaching a class or two at the college level. They don't necessarily need the income, and by tapping into those resources, colleges and universities can broaden what they offer to students, many of whom are paying tens of thousands of dollars per year. But many adjuncts are trying to make a living by teaching. Some adjuncts can teach five classes, earn about $15,000. As for students, the argument goes something like this. Why are students paying, say, $50,000 a year or more without even knowing which professors might be back on campus? Where's the consistency? This hour, we're going to explore all sides of the issue. We should let you know that we reached out to both U of R administration, U of R staff, and SEIU. And SEIU has asked staff members not to participate, given the fact that the decision to unionize is not final. They don't want to damage relationships or future bargaining positions. I explained that I would not need to ask about specific contract demands or details, but SEIU declined unless we promise not to invite university administration, and we explained that we can't do that. But we do have a diverse panel of educators and students with us this hour, and let me go ahead and welcome and introduce my guests who are here. In studio, I've got two University of Rochester students. Miles Meth is here. He is a student, I should say, in favor of the union, as is Daria Nickel. She's a political science major. He is an anthropology major. They are both with Students Supporting Adjuncts. Daria, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Miles, thank you as well. Thanks for being here.
It's great to be here.
In studio is Christopher Nemec. He is a senior lecturer in psychology at the University of Rochester. He is a full-time, non-tenured professor. Nice to see you, sir.
Thank you, Evan.
Thanks for being here. And Lisa Cerami's here. She is a visiting assistant professor of German at Nazareth College. Lisa, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
On the phone with us is Matt Witten, an adjunct professor of contemporary music at the University of Rochester, at Monroe Community College, Finger Lakes Community College, Rowan University, and DeYouville College. Matt, do I have it all, or am I missing some?
Sounds right.
Okay. how many are you teaching at right now?
Four this semester.
All right, four this semester. And I don't mean right this actual second, but the reason you're on the road is getting out to work. So we'll be talking about that as well. And let me go ahead and as well read a statement that did come from the University of Rochester, because their administration was not available to join us in studio today, but they did send over a statement from U of R Provost Peter Lenny. And I'll read that now in its entirety. Quote, "The university administration fully supports faculty members' right to decide for themselves whether to unionize, and will try to ensure that faculty have full access to all relevant information, including information from the SEIU, to help them make an informed decision. However, the university believes that unionization is not in the best interests of the faculty or the university, and would undercut the university's educational mission by introducing a contractual employment relationship for some not yet specified community of interest within the faculty that would undermine the collegial and diverse infrastructure on which the university's success depends," end quote. So in other words, the university administration is saying they're going to support whatever is decided. They would prefer not to see unionization for the reasons I just mentioned, and that's the statement that came from them. And Chris Nemec, I'll start with you. What do you make of the university statement? Go ahead.
I'm in agreement with it. I mean, I fully understand the rationale for the unionization. The idea is that we want to improve working conditions. We want to really make sure that teaching and scholarship are priorities at the University of Rochester. And I fully stand behind these ambitions. Part of what the unionization effort involves is the assumption that the best way to do this is to unionize and to develop a more strong, a more unified voice. The problem, as I see it, is when we unionize, our own individual voice, our own individual sense of choice is weakened. And I'm happy to explore that further in the hour, but that's the position that I have.
All right, let me kind of go around the rest of the panel, and I'll turn to student Miles Meth, who wrote an essay supporting the adjunct and contingent faculty. And I want to read just a little bit of what you wrote, and then you can expand on it, Miles. You wrote, quote, "I was shocked to learn that some adjunct professors make as little as $4,000 per class, though some will earn up to $10,000. The school is willing to dish out more to have a smoothie bar installed than to compensate professors for hours of work spent in and out of class," end quote. As a student, Miles, what do you think the impact is of the growing adjunctization of staff? So what's the impact on you?
Well, I think that the impact is huge. And, you know, I talk a little bit there about a salary and pay, which is a really, you know, important issue. But a little bit later in the essay, I actually go on and talk about some of the conversations that I've had with contingent faculty, a lot of adjunct professors in particular. And a question that I ask a lot of them is, you know, have you ever approached anybody about trying to change X, Y, and Z issue? Because their issues are incredibly diverse. Everything from job security to pay to professional development opportunities that they don't have. And almost every time I bring that up, people kind of just scoff. They're, you know, I can't bring this up, but, you know, I can't do that. And what I've seen in my experience working at the Union of Clerical and Technical Workers at Harvard and seeing the adjunct and contingent faculty unionization efforts across the country is that for the people with the least amount of power who are doing an incredible amount of work, a union really is a way for them to have a voice and to be able to, you know, address some of the concerns that they have that right now, if they bring it up, it's just going to be laughed off.
Daria Nicola, I assume as a student, you're supporting this unionization effort because you feel like it negatively impacts you and your fellow classmates. And in what ways? What would you say to that?
I would have to say I'm in complete agreement with Miles. I've spoken with some faculty members who have had to go on Medicaid. They've had to work multiple jobs, like we've mentioned earlier, and they're not able to devote as much time to the classroom or to being able to meet with students in office hours because they don't have offices to meet with students. And it's just really disheartening, especially when I have, like, close to $50,000 in student loans, and I'm taking out those loans to further my education, but I'm seeing that people who have earned PhDs are struggling, you know, and it's just not being able to build relationships with faculty members who might not come back the next semester, not being able to have those connections and truly explore the diversity of thought and whatnot, because they might have other concerns on their minds.
Sure, you know? And to be clear, you guys are both graduating this year, yes?
Yes.
Okay, so have you had adjunct professors or non-tenured professors, contingent professors in your career who either didn't come back the next year or you told friends, this would be a great class to take, maybe a lot of us have had younger siblings come up in the same situations, and all of a sudden that's not available. Have you had that?
See, that's the thing that I find interesting. I don't know if I've had that, because okay, finding out who is a contingent faculty member, who is an adjunct member, is incredibly difficult, and people aren't always able to tell their stories, so we don't know.
I can say that part of what attracted me to the anthropology department is that almost every professor there is tenured and they have a great relationship. So, you know, professors are back year to year. And that's, you know, a big reason why I'm an anthro major. But I know that I have friends in the film department who are film majors, and in art and art history who have definitely had people that they'd love to take a class with again that are not back the next year.
Okay.
It's definitely a reality.
Let me turn to Matt Whitten, who's on the phone with us. And Matt, why don't you tell us a little bit about your teaching background and sort of how you got to this point of, right now teaching in four different places. So tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I came to Rochester in 2007 to do a doctorate at the Easton School of Music. And over the course of the time while I was there, I was presented with an opportunity to direct a club at the University of Rochester. You know, to most of the people who live at the U of R and at Easton, there is a separate music department at the university. So I was offered an opportunity to direct a percussion ensemble, which at the time was a club. And I took that over in 2008. And I believe by 2010, we were able to get it to be a credited course, and then I officially became faculty there in 2014 when I completed my doctorate at Eastman. Being a part of the university, it wasn't, they have a policy of not allowing you to be faculty if you're still a student. So once my status changed, I was able to be faculty there. But also, simultaneously with that position and my studies at Eastman, I began trying to make money in the area as a music teacher, and was able to get a position teaching a variety of different courses at Monroe Community College for about 4 years. And due to budget cuts and lack of work there, my classes were given to full-time teachers. Their classes were canceled because of low enrollment or lack of funding, and then therefore for them to make a full-time status, adjuncts lost classes. And then being the low man on the totem pole in regards to seniority there, I was the first person to not receive another class. So I haven't been back there in almost two full years, but I have been lucky enough to get some positions in other schools. This year I've been teaching at Finger Lakes Community College, and this semester I just began teaching at the Uville College in Buffalo. And also this year I've been doing an online course at a school in New Jersey that I did my master's degree at, and also did adjunct teaching there years ago when I lived in New Jersey, called Rowan University. And so, you know, I spend a lot of time in the car going from Canandaigua to Rochester and from Rochester to Buffalo and back and forth, like I'm doing right now on the way to Buffalo, which is why I couldn't be in the studio with you guys.
Matt, just before I turn to Lisa in studio for her own experience, just briefly, with all of the different places you end up going, are you worried that that impacts the quality of the work you do as an educator, or is this effort, the unionization effort, is this potentially about providing you more stability and security? I'm trying to make sure I understand what your goal is long term and what, you know, what you'd like to see change.
My main goal is to try and affect change on the local level about a national issue that I think is essentially a crisis in academia, that there are so many adjunct teachers and so few tenure-track positions now. Tenure-track professors retire and replaced by two or three adjuncts, and it's happening everywhere. Some places are worse than others. Some places are doing pretty good at it, and I'd like to say that I think the University of Rochester is one of those schools that's doing better than most in regards to the numbers of adjuncts versus tenure-track professors. But I would like to see this set a trend, which is already a trend in the country. A variety of universities have been able to unionize, like Duke University, University of Chicago, and I would like to see the University of Rochester do the same thing, to be a leader in our community and a leader for this this hopeful effect of change on the way we value higher education in the country.
So where is this happening? He mentioned University of Chicago, Duke, University of Minnesota, Brandeis, Northeastern, Tufts University's Colleges of Arts and Sciences, Mills College in the Bay Area, College of St. Rose in Albany. So there's a lot of these kind of discussions going on here. Lisa, when it comes to your experience, I know you're a visiting assistant professor of German now at Nazareth College. I don't know if you've been an adjunct in the past in your teaching career.
I have been an adjunct in the past. I'm trying to think of, there are maybe three or four discrete episodes of having adjuncted at a variety of different institutions.
Discrete episodes, you talk about it like it's a heart condition.
Yeah, exactly. No, and at that point I was sort of in between completing my dissertation and going on to the next phase. And it was the kind of work that I, at that point, was pretty happy to have, that it allowed me to build teaching experience, have access and experiences in different diverse kinds of classrooms. And to a certain extent, that is how one imagines the system evolves, that we have this, that having adjunct positions like that now exist all over the place, gave a lot of flexibility to certain kinds of individuals looking for a certain kind of experience. That is, however, not how it has grown recently.
Do you think the system is being abused?
I don't know. I don't know who would be doing the abusing. I think there are a variety of different different causes for the growth of adjunctification and the dependence on contingent labor. I don't know if I would necessarily be able to point to one cause, or that actually it was inspired in the best place to begin with. You know, why we depend on a narrative that adjuncts, the adjunct position was always inherently a good idea, and for professionals that needed this particular kind of experience or wanted to give back to the university in some way, but that and that suddenly we have a different situation. But I think a lot has happened along the way that would suggest that that's not a total narrative of how this happened.
Sounds like you think it's out of balance.
Absolutely out of balance. It is absolutely out of balance in terms of the numbers that we see. I think, as you said, AAUP thinks of that contingent positions are held by 75% of people who are now instructing.
What should it be? I don't know if we know. There's no perfect formula, I'm sure, but it should be a lot different, I assume, in your mind. Do you have an idea of what it should be?
I mean, I think it's not. I think it creates unideal educational spaces for students, but for the faculties themselves. I think it creates unhealthy and unproductive hierarchical patterns in departments and at institutions. Like the students have already mentioned, the kind of instability that comes from depending on adjunct or contingent labor is for the students themselves. It has a negative impact on their educational experiences and possibilities.
That's exactly what Miles was saying earlier. You want to follow up?
Yeah, go ahead. Just very quickly to the question of, you know, what it should be. I don't want to give direct, it should be this percentage, because, you know, it depends university to university. But what I can say is that if we put this in a historical context, 50 years ago, it was about flipped the national averages of adjuncts and tenure track professors. So you had about 7 out of 10 professors were on the tenure track in a very comfortable position. And then you had, these people coming through the ranks, supplementing, teaching classes here and there. And I think that was a much healthier dynamic than what we have now, which, while it's not as bad at the U of R, across the country, you've got just sort of a class of professors who are in very precarious positions. And I mean, I think I would go as far to say that they are, you know, being abused somewhat.
Well, let me ask Chris Nemec to weigh in as well. And then what I want to do is I want to read a couple of pieces of feedback from our listeners that came in this morning that are very different, I think offer very different perspectives from people in our community. And I'll let our listeners know. If you've got comments or questions you want to weigh in, you can call the program toll-free. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. We're talking about the increase in the ranks of so-called contingent professors, or mostly adjuncts, but not always. And Chris Nemec, you know, you're hearing about this concern about balance. Do you think it's out of balance right now?
Nationally, it may be. At the University of Rochester, I'm not sure that it is. Part of the concern that I have with this unionization movement at the University of Rochester is that the term contingent faculty is a very broad spectrum. You know, we have time as reported faculty who fall under contingent faculty. We have adjuncts. We have lecturers. We have senior lecturers. When we have such a broad spectrum, it's really hard to understand what the needs and what the goals of any individual unit in that spectrum may be. The concern, again, that I have is that when we go to unionize, the individual faculty lose their sense of voice, they lose their sense of choice. I mean, all future negotiations then become a matter that's dealt with the University of Rochester and the union. And if I look at my own experience, a lot of what I have in terms of my appointment and the benefits that I have was a function not only of my hard work, but also my negotiation with the chair of my department and the ability of my chair to speak on my behalf. And so for me, it's very threatening to lose that sense of voice, to advocate for myself when we go to unions.
Sure, and I'm trying to understand if you think it's possible that at least on the national level, we have a lack of balance right now,
mm-hmm.
with 70% contingent faculty, only about 30% full-time tenure track. which is, as Miles said, it's really flipped in 50 years.
Yeah.
If you think that's out of balance,
yeah.
then how are we going to get there without some sort of organizing help? I mean, it sounds like what you are advocating is individual negotiation, individual mm-hmm. advocacy,
mm-hmm.
and it sounds like a lot of your peers are concerned that's not going to be enough to change things.
Well, I'm only speaking from my own experience.
Sure,
I've had a lot of success mm-hmm. advocating for myself. I'm the director of undergraduate studies in psychology. I've won major teaching awards at the university. I've had the pleasure of teaching Miles in two mm-hmm. classes when he was a freshman and sophomore. For me, what I think we need is we need teachers to advocate for themselves in the same way that students advocate for themselves. My understanding is that the university and the senior administration tend to be open to such discourse and to scoff at the idea that, oh, I can't talk with the administration, I can't talk with my chair, I think says something about the mindset, but maybe we can work to change that mindset outside of the confines of an organizing effort.
Let me ask Professor Witten to weigh in. What do you think, Professor?
Well, I'd like to say that I'm sorry that his view of what the union would do has such a I'm not sure that he would be losing his voice. We see this as a way to gain a voice because there's so many of us that we will be stronger together than apart as individuals. And the union is us. We're the faculty. And what we would like is to sit together and figure out what our needs are and see if we can get the administration to agree to those needs. So the individual's voice will be heard within that union and then would be represented, and we will vote for what we, the faculty, want. So I don't see it as a loss of voice at all. In fact, I see it quite the opposite. I've never spoken to the administration about my situation. I'm not forming this union so much as a complaint to the administration. I don't see this as me taking on the administration of the University of Rochester. I hope that they don't see it that way either. Like I said before, I'd like to see us be a leader in the forefront of trying to get this downward swing of academia, of using so many adjuncts instead of tenure-track professors. And I'd like to see us maybe be a way of leading by example by forming a union, giving the faculty a unified voice, hopefully more equity of pay, some benefits and job security, so that we can all lead by example, that hopefully other schools in the area, maybe Syracuse and Buffalo, outside of here, like Ithaca College has also unionized, hope that they will also follow suit. When they see a strong presence like the University of Rochester doing something that's really right, not so much as being a culprit of doing something wrong, but maybe being an example of what's right.
Lisa, any concerns about, you know, individual advocacy versus union advocacy?
Well, I have two things I was thinking about. One, I think that the sense of one's individual voice would probably differ depending on one's status. That is to say, if someone has a full-time job, has, you know, maybe goes to department meetings, has relationships among the faculty, is full-time on campus, those things change whether or not one feels empowered to speak for themselves or to advocate for themselves. If one is teaching one or two courses at an institution, perhaps doesn't have any workspace there, doesn't have an invitation to department meetings, doesn't have necessarily any strong connections to administrators or to the chair, you're in a much more disempowered position to advocate for better conditions for yourself. I think as a profession, we've not been so great at thinking of ourselves together and the ways in which we are not actually individuals, but a member of a group, and not necessarily how we identify with our institution, but how we identify with other people who are instructors. That's I think part of the push now towards organizing at a variety of campuses across the United States has to do with imagining us as one faculty, that we are not that this is a project that we're doing together. I think there's a kind of allergy a little bit to that notion within the academy, that that it's a communal effort, or that one isn't divided by a certain kind of hierarchies. One feels very proud often to think of that which they've achieved as a marker of what they put into it, as a marker of their success. And especially, I think that causes a lot of division between especially tenure track or tenured people and the other individuals that are teaching courses. They can't identify with each other on the basis of their rank or their successes. They could, however, identify with each other on the fact that they're instructors and that they have this, you know, this relationship to their students that is common. I think added to that is something of an allergy of thinking as what we do on campuses as labor, that that what we're doing as professors is somehow ennobled beyond labor. And when we start talking about unionization or collective bargaining, we have to be forced into thinking of what we do as work. I think that there's a tendency to not want to think of what we do as work as professors, and I think that's not a good tendency.
All right, let me reset the conversation for you here, because I know we have a lot of listeners who want to weigh in now, and I want to go ahead and get to our audience feedback. You just heard Lisa. She is the visiting assistant professor of German at Nazareth College. Matt Witten's on the phone with us as he travels to his next... where are you going right now, Matt? Tell us again where you're headed right now.
I'm driving to Buffalo to teach a music history course at DeUville College.
Okay, he's a professor of contemporary music at University of Rochester. He's taught at MCC, Finger Lakes Community College, Rowan College, DeUville College, so a long list for Matt. Christopher Nemec is here, a senior lecturer in psychology at the University of Rochester, and a couple of students are in studio with us as well. They are student leaders in the Student Supporting Adjuncts Movement, Daria Nickel and Miles Meth. And let me go ahead and read once again, if you missed it, the statement from Rochester, University of Rochester Provost Peter Lenny on this issue, because we did reach out to the U of R administration. They couldn't be here in studio, but they did send this statement, and I'll read it one more time here. Quote, the university administration fully supports faculty members' right to decide for themselves whether to unionize and will try to ensure that faculty have full access to all relevant information, including information from the SEIU, to help them make an informed decision. However, the university believes that unionization is not in the best interests of the faculty or the university and would undercut the university's educational mission by introducing a contractual employment relationship for some not yet specified community of interest within the faculty that would undermine the collegial and diverse infrastructure on which the university's success depends, end quote. So let's do this here. Let's take a short break, come back, and get to your questions by email, via Twitter, and via phone on a wide range of these issues next. Coming up in our second hour, PBS's Kenyatta Berry from Genealogy Roadshow joins us in studio, talking about ancestry, genealogy, digging into our past and our roots, how to do it effectively, and what we might find if we try. Why are so many of us obsessed? We'll talk about it next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Jake just wants to know how much of the adjunct issue is pay-oriented. And the answer to that is, I think it's a big part, and I don't think that's any secret. The Wall Street Journal reporting, for example, that at Duke, where there was a unionization movement, for example, adjunct faculty members earn on average about $3,000 a class, roughly $18,000 a year with a typical course load, compared to the median salary of nearly $70,000 for entry-level tenure track faculty. It's not a perfect representation of all schools, and in fact, at University of Rochester, I'm told, and Miles was writing, adjuncts can make up to $10,000, sometimes as little as $4,000 per class. And so this movement would raise pay almost certainly, probably per credit hours, what I've seen in most places in terms of the proposal, but we're not here to wade through possible contracts or negotiations. Jake, I can just tell you that no doubt the idea would be to make sure there's more equity, that adjuncts would make more. And so let me grab some phone calls here and start working through the various feedback we're getting. In Henrietta, this is John first up. Go ahead, John.
Hi. About 30 years ago, I was going to a university in California as a graduate student, and at the end of the first semester, they put a call out to anyone who had done any public speaking at all. It was in a school of communications, because the Board of Regents had decided that public speaking needed to be a literacy requirement, required retroactively. They had three public speaking professors on faculty, and they had 1,100 students that needed to complete courses by the end of the school year. So they jammed some of us grad and undergraduate students in, as they didn't call us adjunct. They originally tried to call us graduate teaching assistants, but the school system pushed back on that and said, we don't have GTU in the state university system. So we were just instructors. I think I got about $300 a course. I had to teach half-time. After 3 years, I still hadn't completed my master's degree, which was a one-year program, and had to leave and go to work. But there was good and bad for both the students and for both those of us who taught. I had some fabulous experiences. I met a student, a former student, 10 years ago. She recognized me. I didn't recognize her. She said I was the best instructor she had her full 4 years there. So it was a rich experience for me, but I could see that some students were not getting taken care of by undergraduates who were, you know, I'm going to say posing as college professors. And but you know, what were they to do? I mean, this was they were sort of pushed into it. I think there's pros and cons on both sides of this question.
John, thanks for the phone call, and we're hearing some of those pros and cons. And let me just go ahead and read two very different comments. Here's an email from Tom in Pittsford. Evan, as a lifelong conservative, I admit my instinct is not to support efforts to unionize, but in this case, I can understand it. We had to decide whether it was worth paying more than $50,000 per year for my son to go to college. Where's the return on investment? And now I hear that most of his professors aren't even full-time. What happens if most of them go somewhere else next year? Who teaches? For the money that we're paying for higher education, there should be incredible levels of quality and stability. I'm surprised they're nickel and diming the staff when tuition is already so expensive. That is Tom in Pittsford. But let me read Nick on Twitter, who writes to us. And Nick says, my hope would be that some of those adjuncts are hired permanently. Sadly, that's unlikely. But I know some do it as additional income. So my biggest concern is that talent isn't fully tapped into in favor of tenure. I've toyed with the idea of adjuncting myself so I can help give back while working full time. I might lose that opportunity if adjunct pay is increased dramatically. Chris, do you think it's likely that if this unionization movement happens, we'll see the ranks of the adjuncts? By the way, like people like me, I taught at Nazareth a year ago, just with another colleague, a communications class, not because it was a need for or value for the money, it's because I love doing it. And Nick is saying, I'd love to be in that same position, but we may lose people in that category of adjunct. Mm-hmm. Do you think that is likely?
Absolutely. As the pay goes up, as the benefits goes up, it becomes much more difficult to bring new voices, even for a little bit of time, into the fold. So I think it's a real concern that's raised.
And then we've had a couple questions about class size. Do you think class size goes up if this passes? Because I haven't studied that part of it. I've had a number of emails, people saying, I've heard it elsewhere, class size is bigger.
Class size can go up. I think at the University of Rochester, we do our best to keep class size at a reasonable amount. I know that it's quite high in some of the courses that I teach, but I like it like that, and I think it speaks to popularity of the instructors. But there are ways to decrease class size as well through the use of teaching assistants and other methods, and so it's not necessarily of concern.
Concern about class size, students in the room? Daria, Miles?
I was going to say something similar. I think it has to do with popularity of the course, and they can always cut off the number of students that can attend or participate in a course. So that might not be the biggest concern, but I can see that as a concern.
Let me read a series of comments. And by the way, if you're waiting on the phone, we are going to squeeze in as much as we can. I know we are blown up now. There's so much interest in this subject, which is not surprising. Joel writes to us and says, individual adjuncts have no voice. Generally, you have no negotiation for salary. That's the case at every place where I have ever taught as an adjunct. University of Minnesota, U of R, MCC, GCC, RIT, etc., during the last 19 years. No benefits, classes taken away at the last minute and given to full-time faculty, often no involvement with department through meetings and advising, few opportunities to get funding for conferences, professional development, resources, etc., all for the price of $1,999 to $3,500 per course. One semester you may get 2 to 4 courses, the next you might get 7. Rarely do you have a full course load, so we are forced to cobble together several courses over several campuses over many miles. Matt, does that ring true to you?
I think my past 8 years of my life are living proof of that.
Okay, and
I need all of these jobs. I can't, you know, when one disappears, I'm really grateful to have another one. I never know for sure where I'm going to be next semester. I've been treated the most consistently by the University of Rochester, and I'm very grateful to them for that. But Finger Lakes Community College, I'm temporary there. They might ask me back in the fall, but I don't know. And other places, I taught at Nazareth temporarily and Alfred temporarily, and those came to an end. And at MCC, I didn't feel like I was temporary until my classes were continually canceled and handed off to a full-time faculty in favor of keeping their load full. What the caller just said is exactly what the truth is. We're having to piece this together by working a number of different jobs and still not really being able to sustain ourselves. And most of the adjuncts don't get the opportunity to teach in the summertime. If there are summer courses at schools, it's always been my experience that those get first offered to the full-time faculty who also don't teach in the summer. So right now I'm concerned with how am I going to pay my bills over the summer, and this is a yearly thing. And as much as my efforts are to try and save pennies for the summer so that I have some kind of a nest egg, I make so little it barely covers my bills, and there's not a lot to squeeze out for the summertime. And as an example, last summer I worked at Target.
Jason writes to us on Twitter and says, I was an adjunct at Geneseo, $2,100 for a three-credit course. Less than minimum wage. I only did it because I enjoyed it and had a real job. But I want to jump in with Sarah in Rochester, who understands the need for more full-time but wants to advocate for the perks of adjuncts. Sarah, go ahead. Why don't you explain?
I've had a few adjuncts that have taught at MCC, and they were good professors, and they chose that because that's what they wanted. They wanted the ability to not have to go to the teacher-staff meetings or not have to go to the board meetings, and they had more freedom on their schedule on what classes that they would teach. And the good ones that I've had, if they needed to set aside some time for the students, even if they didn't actually have an office, they would make office hours, whether it was sitting in one of the libraries on campus or meeting at a coffee shop or someplace. If you needed that time, they would do that because they were doing it because they wanted to. And I feel like as much as, yes, we use more full-time and tenured professors, some of those adjuncts are in that position because that's what they want, and they like that freedom. And I don't agree with forcing more full-time, but I understand making that more available for the professors who actually want to go that full-time and put that higher commitment in.
All right, go ahead, Chris.
I just want to say I had a colleague of mine. She was a graduate student at the U of R at the same time that I was, and she went to another university, and she opted to stay in a contingent position. She was offered a tenure-track position. She opted to stay in a contingent position.
Why?
Because she didn't want to have to deal with the pressures of publishing to get tenure. It's a totally different set of demands that are placed on you. Typically, in contingent positions, we're evaluated solely on our teaching. And the publishing world, although it's a fun world to be in, is very, very long, very, very difficult at times. I have two daughters. This colleague who I'm speaking of has a couple of children as well. Both of us made the decision that we wanted to commit ourselves to our families rather than to securing grants and publishing papers.
Like what Sarah just said, Lisa, can you respond there? Go ahead.
I understand that there are people who would prefer to have the freedom and the flexibility of these appointments. I don't think it statistically bears out that this is the majority of people who are now taking these positions. I think that...
The teaching for fun, so to speak.
The teaching for fun, or the teaching for enrichment, or not...
To give back, as opposed to teaching for a career.
Exactly, that it's not existential. I think as far as the numbers are concerned, and I don't have any in front of me, but as far as what I've read, that we're seeing that it's more and more the case that these kinds of decisions are in the minority, and that otherwise people like the caller, like Matt, are driven to work under these conditions because that is the job that they get. I think that we've seen since at least 2008. A marked decline in the availability of full-time positions and tenure-track positions. I mean, to say nothing of tenure-track positions, but even full-time positions. Since the recession, there has been a sharp decline in the willingness of institutions or the ability of institutions to pay people the salaries and the kind that, yeah, the salaries that were once demanded for certain kinds of teaching. And at the same time, we haven't seen necessarily a fewer number of people go into the profession. So we've just had a marked increase of people who are looking, who are not looking to for something on the side, but this is what they went in to be. This was how they professionalized and planned on making a living. And the only option that's available to them, because those are the only positions that exist, are these contingent or adjunct positions.
Yeah, different Chris writes to us on Twitter and says, because of adjunct hiring, there was only one remaining professor in my major at Brockport just 2 years after graduation. Maggie has been waiting to weigh in. Go ahead, Maggie.
Hi. I am a student who's going to be on the market for a teaching position in about a year, and I find that the tone of some of the comments a little bit disheartening here, because I think that Lisa, I believe her name is spot on in that there seems to be this sort of schizophrenic relationship between academia and itself, wherein I think we see ourselves as like it's a calling, right? Like I signed on to be a sociology professor when I have 3 children, and like it seems like this thing, but you do it knowing that it is a little bit of a gamble, much like any job, because you sort of see it as a calling. And I think that obscures the fact that she said that it's a job. What you are going to do is to give your labor to this institution that you care about, because you want to contribute your knowledge, you want to contribute to the lives of people who are coming up, much like you. I worked my way through MCC and the SUNY system, and I have a scholarship to graduate school, and it's something that I take very seriously. Like, I take the idea that I'm going to be doing this work very seriously, and I'm deeply disheartened to hear the U of R and other institutions sort of echoing this business mentality, wherein they don't seem to see labor, they don't seem to see the people who actually do the work as part of the cost of doing business. Paying professors and paying people and giving them decent benefits and job security should be seen, as in all areas of work, as part of the cost of doing business. They are doing the work of your university. We're the ones who are teaching these students, and it's a place that is focused on the passing of knowledge, and we're the conduit of that, right? So I think that for as much as people may want to go and teach for fun, and that's wonderful, the vast majority of us, as Lisa said also, you're my favorite, Rosemary. this is what we want to do for a living, and we should be compensated fairly because we work really, really hard to learn the things that we learn. We work really, really hard to get through school. You know, many of us balancing families and work and all of those things. And then to come out in this position where, you know, what you guys keep calling, what is it, contingent employment, what I would call tenuous employment, right? it's so disheartening.
Well, Maggie, I've got to get to other callers and feedback, but thank you so much for the phone call. And I want to stress again, if the University of Rochester administration were here, this would be a great chance for them to weigh in on that. They were not available. They sent a statement essentially saying they're going to support unionization. If that's what the faculty decides to do, they would prefer that the faculty doesn't go in that direction, but they do want the faculty to make an informed decision. But we have a professor who is here, Christopher Nemec, who is a senior lecturer in psychology at the U of R, who doesn't want to see unionization happen. And so what would you say to the comments you just heard from Maggie?
Of course I agree that we need to have just compensation, of course. I'm just not convinced that the best way to do that is unionization. I spoke with union representatives, and what I've heard are a bunch of promises that are just not based in reality, so far as I can tell.
All right, so in other words, you don't want status quo. You want change through other means than unionization.
Absolutely. I'm all for just compensation. I'm all for improving the working conditions of our faculty. Absolutely.
Let me ask the students to respond to another comment. This comes from Eric on Twitter, a different tack on adjuncts. Eric writes, adjuncts also bring outside experience that some full professors simply don't have. Many of mine went from grad school right to teaching. I'd rather have an adjunct who is working in their field than a professor who spent their entire career in a classroom. Miles?
Well, I think that there's a slight misconception that the idea of people coming together to unionize will make it so that, you know, nobody can be an adjunct anymore. And, you know, everybody has to be full time or even on the tenure track, which is definitely not what we're going for. We do understand that, especially for young people coming through the ranks, it can be a beneficial thing to have that freedom to be on shorter term contracts. And, you know, you can bring outside experience. Our concern isn't so much with the folks who are coming in and adjuncting for fun. That's fantastic. Our focus is really on the people who are there and have, you know, expressed that they're kind of quietly struggling behind the scenes. So I think that having a union there is just a way for them to say, hey, we want to, you know, have a voice. We want to have better benefits. We want to have more pay. And then we can continue to do the great things that we've been doing.
David in Fairport writes, having paid $50,000 per year for my children to go to college, where does the money go if not to the faculty? Well, I think some of it goes to faculty, but I can't break all the, I don't have an answer for that.
Well, I mean, I don't have a good answer. But I think that's the second person now who's brought up the fact of tuition. And I think that's a super important aspect of this topic that often isn't really discussed in tandem with the contingent issue, largely because we have an understanding that that's not where the money goes, that there's something is more expensive about colleges and universities now that is not necessarily being funneled into educational costs. And I think that you guys had also brought up some of the kinds of things in earlier of that money goes toward. Because we're seeing a greater number of students paying tuition. So it's not that we are necessarily desperate for more tuition dollars to cover our costs. We're seeing more people in college. So where is that money going? I think you guys.
Yeah.
I was going to add that there's a great website called GuideStar.com where you can look at the taxes of nonprofits. So the University of Rochester is actually on that as well. And you can see that the president is making six figures. You can see where each of the tuition dollars and whatnot goes towards, and it's really a great informative tool.
Yeah, so you have, that's awesome, I didn't know that. I think that, too, one can think about the different kinds of non-academic spaces and facilities that are built on campuses mm-hmm. that a lot of, that seem to be important to prospective students and prospective parents, and so they want to be able to offer two things that students are asking for. We have, I think, a growth, and this has been reported now for a few years now, the growth in administrative costs at institutions, the growth in the number of administrators vis-a-vis or in comparison to faculty members, but also, you know, the number of positions and the salaries that are attached to those have grown, I think it's not exaggerated to say exponentially. And so those two things at least are what the places that higher tuition dollars end up going.
All right, Jeffrey and Irondequoit, if you can keep it to 30 seconds, last call, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on this. There seems to be two main facets of it. You know, the position of the students, position of the teachers, obviously. I was a kind of a supplemental educator who was not interested in going into either high school, you know, or higher education. I went to undergrad at Cornell because this is a general phenomenon where there are no full-time positions anymore. And if you look at, U of R's position here, we'll support unionization, but we don't think it's the right way. Well, they said the same thing to the nurses at the U of R when they tried to, unionize about 10 years ago. And now the nurses in U of R make less money than any nurse in the state of New York.
Well, and I think what the U of R has said, the administration has said, is what you often hear from management, which is they're also concerned about the collegial relationship. They don't want it to become adversarial. They've said that. You hear that from management in a lot of negotiations when employees are considering a union. That's pretty common as well. Matt Whitten, before we let you go, 30 seconds from you. What do you think happens next at the University of Rochester? What do you expect?
Well, I hope that we will successfully form the union and that them come to an amicable agreement with the faculty and make all of our lives and the students' lives a little bit better, make the students' education a little bit better. And I really hope that some other adjuncts might be empowered at other schools in the area to have similar efforts and I think the more adjuncts in the country that unionize, the better. I think this is absolutely an issue of labor. We are experts in the field. They need us to provide our expertise, but we have a variety of experts that aren't all paid equally across the nation. So I think that this is something that we can stop the corporatization of college education in the country. I think that that would be a great step forward.
Matt, thanks for taking the time. I know you're traveling to work. Thanks for joining the program today.
Thank you very much.
And Chris, do you know, by the way, what the timeline is for a vote? When do you expect a decision one way or another? Do you happen to know?
No, I don't. I first came into contact with a representative about 2 months ago, and okay. I think that they're trying to secure enough signatures to go to a vote, but they're not there yet.
Sound right, you guys? Yeah.
Right. Can I just add that student support is high. We have 1,000 signatures and counting on a petition in support of adjuncts. So.
Okay. Well, keep us informed on this. But it's not just at the University of Rochester. It's a discussion around the country about where higher education has gone. And I want to thank all of our guests from all their perspectives. Lisa, thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Miles and Daria, it's from a student perspective. Thank you very, very much. Short break, more connections next.